I know what you're thinking. Yes, Kim Justice is doing Rise of the Robots. Yeah, you're damn right I wish it had a different title. But if you truly want to look at the great scourges of the industry, you simply can't not cover this one. I've had a quick glance over it once or twice, it did make my list of 20 worst Mega Drive games after all. But yeah, the story of this game is way too interesting to be limited purely to that. It doesn't just need a review, it needs one of those quasi-documentaries, the whole nine yards. In the entire history of video game hype, there is perhaps no game that was hyped more than Rise of the Robots. It was plastered all over magazines for an entire year, regarded as the future of gaming. And then, the arrival. Oh my lord, the arrival. The disappointment, the embarrassment, the degradation, the shock. It couldn't really be this bad, could it? Yes, it could. And it was British. So this video can't just go into the game and leave it at that. That covers barely 5% of the story. We need to start with the year of hype and beyond, going back to when the sleek image of a dark blue cyborg was plastered over video game magazines across the entire world. The useful thing about researching Rise of the Robots, oh god, is that if you look hard enough there's plenty of material detailing the making of the game. Why, there's an entire book detailing the genesis, creation and distribution of Rise. Trouble is, the book was written by Kieran Brennan, who worked on the game and was actually released on the game's PC CD-ROM edition as a whopping great indulgent puff piece. No, really. You thought that Metal Gear Solid 2 was the only game to feature an entire frickin' novel as part of its supplementaries? No, this did too. And if anything, it's even more self-indulgent. So you might want to discard that entirely. The best thing to do is to look back at the magazines of the past. The hype machine for Rise started in late 1993, a whole year out from the release of the game as it turned out, which at the time was a little unusual. Rise of the Robots is one of the first examples of a single game getting such coverage so far out and continuing to get that coverage. Not that this was wholly intentional, but Mirage, the brains behind the game, were, if nothing else, good at keeping the interest going while typical delays happened behind the scenes. Lots of delays actually, but more on that later. Some of the most extensive coverage of Rise happened, funnily enough, in a pretty new magazine that championed its differences from the rest of the magazines out there. A serious, all-business games magazine that appealed to an older audience, was fair but firm in its scoring, and championed the games industry as something serious, worthy of extensive coverage beyond the fluff pieces, pretty pictures and kid-friendly layouts of the major console mags. Essentially a trade paper that was more available to the general public. Whatever your opinion is of Edge and of how they met that standard, that's what it was presented as. If you enjoy it or you think it's an almost comically po-faced pile of utter crud, but it's one of the few games magazines that's still going today despite basically never getting any serious circulation numbers in over 20 years of publication. Rise of the Robots was actually covered a little in the very first issue of Edge in August 1993, but the most memorable feature was in October's third issue, an iconic front cover and a sprawling 8-page feature, by far more information than anyone else had on the game. The feature itself is in typical Edge style, not overly hyped up, and if you didn't know anything else about the game, then the folks behind the project actually seem enthusiastic and personable, not overly hucksterish or anything. They're trying to do something, a full 3D beat-em-up that wasn't exactly common back then, and they recognised limitations they had, sacrifices they might have to make. At this stage, the game was actually to be published by Mirage, and developed by a small 5-man team by the name of Instinct, led by Sean Griffiths, a former Bitmap brother. And they seemed nice enough. And hey, remember the golden rule, no one actually wants to make a bad game right from the outset. Like a lot of things in Edge, it's full of cold and impenetrable technical babble, but the pictures are pretty, and the article goes into the game's intelligent AI system, which keeps track of how much you use a certain move, and then, once it figures out your favourite, it counters accordingly. Seemed pretty impressive at the time, even if the end result was, well, we'll see. The game looks fairly close to done, too. The robots are all there and designed, the backgrounds are there, there's what looks like in-game graphics. It's not far off. It's perhaps a little ridiculous on Edge's part to claim that the game will be out sometime in January when one of the programming team says that the game's about 70% done on the same page, but it certainly didn't look like it was a year away either. At this time, Wise of the Robots at best looked like a potentially solid beat-em-up with top-level graphics, I mean really top-level graphics, available for computers and worked on by a small five-man team. Yeah, just five people. A front cover of a magazine, even a new and niche one like Edge, was certainly a positive, but, well, not enough, clearly. Mirage as a whole wanted to take the project to the next level. They wanted an SF2 beta. Somewhere around the time of this article, the project received a huge marketing boost due to a partnership with Time Warner that made them the publishers and Mirage the developers. Suddenly, this wasn't going to be a PC and Amiga fighting game, it was going to be on absolutely everything, and in the spirit of Mortal Monday, it'd be on everything at the same time. Hell, it'd eventually be in the arcades too. Wise of the Robots was going to be the game of 1994, apparently. Hype started to appear in the game and TV programmes of the time, with Bad Influence changing its whole title sequence and indeed its look in general based on Rise of the Robots. The quotes from Mirage and the like behind the game became more outlandish, talking more about the game's extensive plot rather than what was actually going on with the gameplay. There were big PR videos, promises of a full soundtrack by no less a figure than Brian May. Pretty spectacular stuff, you know. And that's not all. How about an actual novel released by Penguin? What about plans for Rise of the Robots, the movie? What about a proposed line of toys? What about 60-second cinematic and TV adverts, and spreads in comics like Viz? This all happened, more or less. And yet there wasn't ever much point into when the game would actually be out. It might have been set for January of 1994 at some point, but it didn't make that, not by a long chalk. Didn't make February either. Or May. Or August. Why was the game so delayed anyway? History's a little unclear on that, although my betting is that the ports had a lot to do with it. Obviously, the Mega Drive and SNES weren't capable of fully 3D graphics, so those ports as a whole would have to be redone almost totally as a digitised 2D game. Not to mention porting over all the extraordinary gameplay achievements or whatever they were calling them now. And then there's the small matter of a handheld version for the Game Gear, this purported arcade version, upgraded versions for the Mega CD and CD32, and even versions for the 3DO and, oh my lord, the CDI. This game was set to appear on 13 different platforms. Time Warner's boost had changed the nature of the project entirely, and as the scope of the project increased, the release date was pushed further and further back. Eventually, the game was set for touchdown, Christmas 1994. The hype period had, in the end, been way too long. The mystery and intrigue had now been replaced by flat-out wondering if the game was actually going to come out. There was talk of development struggles, talk that perhaps the game wasn't quite as fully done as it might have appeared in that original Edge article, talk that the game was spreading itself that little too thin. It's kind of odd that it ended up being released right at the arse end of the year, with not a whole lot of time to generate hype for the Christmas period, it's sort of different to what it would be like now. And also, in a lot of cases, there were no advanced copies released to certain magazines, which is kind of one of the major warning signs that there's trouble in paradise. Mirage and Time Warner, perhaps thinking that Rise of the Robots was going to be the game of 1994 and 1995, decided that they could pull this sort of launch off. We'll see how informed they were. I suppose that it's now a good time to start looking at the game itself. We'll start with the original, which was actually the Amiga version, with the PC version apparently being an upgraded conversion of the Amiga game, according to the PR blurbs anyway. So yes, not only is this game British, it's also an Amiga title, because only Amiga makes it possible, right? Right. This game certainly made floppy disk manufacturers happy if nothing else. It comes on 13 discs, which is absolutely staggering for anything, let alone a fighting game. If you didn't have a second disc drive, you might as well have fucked off then and there. A good bunch of these were dedicated to the game's sprawling, lengthy intro, which detailed a rather extensive plot. Robots are set to take over the Earth and eradicate humanity forever, and it falls to one cyborg, still with shreds of humanity inside of them, to stop this from happening. There's a lot more detail in the manual, obviously, more than you would expect for a fighting game, but not anything you would actually be interested in. Oh, and there's also that Brian May soundtrack. Sorta. It's not actually anything that was composed for the game. It's called The Dark and is taken from a solo album. And it only appears in the game's options screen. About 15 seconds of it anyways. And it's the only music by him in the game. Virtually all the music aside from this was composed by Richard Joseph. So yeah, it's not a bad soundtrack in a lot of the versions actually, but Richard Joseph certainly couldn't be any further removed from Brian May. I mean, look at the hair difference for one. Anyway, the intro's by the by. After swapping a good 3 times to get through it, you pick menu options and swap another disc to get to the first fight. Every robot has their own disc, in fact. You don't have any choice except to play as the Blue Cyborg for plot reasons, and every robot has a disc because they come complete with another fancy CGI sequence where your opponent prowls around and you assess how big a threat they are. And look, the robots are fine creations. No, really. There's way more than just one colour involved. They stick out, they're memorable. There's the odd bit of inspiration from the likes of Aliens, Terminator 2, Blade Runner and so on. They're lovely looking in all honesty. If the game had been properly successful, maybe there could have been a toy line based on these folks, you know? The key word there being if. To do that, the game would have needed to be good too. And so, the fight in itself. Let's just run through the problems, shall we? There's things that you should expect of any fighting game that Liss doesn't do, like the inability to jump over an opponent, or being able to select your fighter. The plot sort of justifies only playing as the Cyborg in one player mode, even if it's hardly ideal, but even in two player mode, one of you will have to be the Cyborg, which is just comical. And whoever plays as the Cyborg has a massive advantage if they just do flying kicks all day, no matter who they're up against. There's the moves themselves. With only one button available, naturally there's not a whole lot of them and they're just, well, rubbish. There's nothing to any of them and even special moves aren't exactly very special. The models may look great, but they almost eat themselves. They're so good that you can't actually do anything with them. Then there's the game's purported brilliance, how the game adapts to your style of play and all of that and learns to counter your favourite move. No, it's not as intelligent as it sounds. It seems to me that the game keeps track of your moves, and if you go over a certain amount it triggers a set counter. Say, punch too much and it'll counter with a flying kick, for example. How do you solve this? Well, you just switch to another move, and until you trigger that set number, the computer barely defends itself. It's actually rather simplistic, and a few full power hits are usually enough to beat any enemy, so even with the limited amount of moves available, you'll easily be able to cycle through and beat the game. And in most cases, the flying kick will pretty much ruin all enemies. On beginner and easy, you can beat the whole game using this move alone without barely taking a scratch. On hard, the computer just does the perfect counter to all your moves from the off and you lose, and forget about learning hard mode properly because the game doesn't have any continues. There's no satisfying way to play this game whatsoever, not even remotely. It's one of the saddest excuses for a fighting game I've ever seen. The stages are also rather dull, and there's absolutely no music in the fights themselves. Again, so much for that Brian May soundtrack. That's a distant memory, one of many insults. The sprites are the only thing the game has going for it, and you can hardly do anything with them, which says a lot for those moves that were apparently made with the help of a martial arts expert. You'd have had a better experience of playing the game if you would have taken that issue of edge with the Cyborg on and bashed it against a Terminator figure. It's horrible. Even an absolute beginner at fighting games could beat this 20 minutes after starting it, and the only reason it's that long is because you have to fight every robot twice before taking on the final boss. Can you believe that this incredibly short game is actually artificially lengthened? And all of this was available to you for the princely knockdown drag-out price of £30. Yeah, future of game in my arse. That's the Amiga version anyway. Are the others better? In short, no. But obviously you're going to want some greatest hits anyway. There's just too many versions of this game to go through all of them, and needless to say they're all utterly dreadful without exception. The PC version certainly looks much better than the Amiga, and took a pretty decent amount of PC power to run back then, but in pretty much all respects it's the exact same game as the Amiga. Same can pretty much be said for the 3DO as well, with a few differences. This game actually does feature a bit more Brian May if you're into that, so at least that part doesn't feel like a massive cosmic joke anymore. But then there's the controls. It's oddly different. This version separates punches and kicks, but you have to switch between them using the block button, even though the 3DO has a 3-button gamepad. Yeah. That's just the level we're at with this brilliant game, isn't it? All the face buttons do the same thing, until you switch them with block. The future's really fucking inconvenient, isn't it? The Mega Drive version best sums up the 16-bit ports. Obviously they don't have those 3D Studio backgrounds, but frankly they weren't that exciting to begin with. The cutscenes are actually still kept somewhat, which is pretty decent for the system. Unfortunately, everything else about the game is kept too, leaving you with the same wretched experience you had on the computer. This version of the game features almost nothing except Richard Joseph's music, which you actually get in matches this time around. And in some regards, the music's not actually all that bad. He was a bloody good composer after all, but, well, nothing could have saved this, with its moves designed by a martial arts expert and computer that learns your style of play, and what the hell ever. Oh, and yeah, there's a Game Gear version. I wonder why this even exists. I mean, honestly. What went through the mind of the people creating it? This is one of the worst games I have ever played. I mean, even as far as this game goes, it beggars belief as to how horrid it is. Tiger Electronics would have been embarrassed by this game. That's how dismal we're talking. And finally, there's the arcade version. This wasn't actually released, but a prototype ROM exists. This features some striking improvements over the home versions, such as being able to choose robots that aren't the cyborg, and being able to jump over your opponent. It might be the best version. However, you can win the game pretty much just through hammering the punch button, so it's still complete garbage. And with that, I think it's about time to draw a line through this game once and for all. Which obviously doesn't mean that we're done. You might well think that such an awful game was a complete and total flop, immediately bargain binned while people try to forget. Some of that might be true, but it was not a flop. Did you forget about that huge marketing campaign already? Rise of the Robots managed to sell a lot of copies when it hit the shelves. I think it might have sold around 1 million overall, I believe. Even if a whole load of those might have been returned. I certainly recall renting the game and taking it back on the very same evening, having already beaten the shitty thing. But yeah, it was not a total failure, sales-wise. Which allows us to look at, oh dear, some nice and ethical gaming journalism. That is the proper stuff, not just the excuse to bother people. Games magazines, especially back in the 90s, often had very different schools of thought. There were ones who tried to be nice to almost everything, ones that were fair but firm, ones that were little more than fluff pieces for whoever was on the front cover that week. And there was a lot of them. In those pre-internet days, they were the only sources around for reviews and the like, so people sure as hell did trust them. And perhaps no game demonstrated the difference between these schools of thought and how the magazines could betray that trust more than Rise of the Robots did. One magazine gave it 91%. Another gave it 5%. Another gave it 90%. Another 19%. How on earth do such things happen? The 91%, one of the highest marks the game received, came from no less a source than Computer and Video Games magazine. These guys had been going since 1981. They were the first monthly magazine in the entire world that dealt purely with video games. Surely they could be trusted. The review itself is sadly unavailable on the internet, but the score speaks for itself, as does the date of it. The review appeared in the November 1994 issue, at least a month before the game's release, touted as a World First Exclusive, or something along those lines. You know what other game was reviewed in the exact same issue? Doom 2. According to CVG, Rise of the Robots was a whole 3 percentage points better than Doom 2. I'm not joking. I barely need to tell you exactly what this review did to CVG's reputation as a once decent and trustworthy mag. It was devastating. The magazine wasn't ever the same again, honestly. Not that that stopped it from going for another frickin' decade and beyond, naturally. The 5% was dished out by Amiga Power, the magazine that was all about fairness and actually using a percentage scale properly. Average games got 50% and so on. I know, crazy concept. It remains one of the most scathing reviews in the entire history of video games. If you think that I'm being harsh on the game, just go ahead and find Jonathan Davis's screed on it. It's easily available and endlessly quotable, including the last line that sums it up as an astonishing waste of time, and the last paragraph that puts a spotlight on the whole dog and pony show and the bullshittery of exclusive reviews. In the midst of Mirage and Time Warner's PR shitstorm, they'd kind of left Amiga Power and other like-minded folks out of their Rolodex, you see, reducing their coverage of the game to a single-page preview many moons ago, and this review, which appeared in the January 1995 issue of the mag, days after the game had already been shat out onto the shelves. Because, you know, they obviously hadn't been given an advance copy of the game. The exact same game was reviewed by stalwart Toilet Paper Monthly Amiga Action, and was given 92%. Who do you believe? So, what's the deal? I mean, how do such things happen? I mean, we all know that paid-for reviews are often a thing. We know that game publishers putting pressure on magazines and the like for good scores is older than the hills. We know all about those actual ethical issues in games journalism. But something bigger than that was also at work. Another video game crash. Well, a video game magazine crash. In 1994, the market for UK games mags, particularly console-focused ones, disintegrated. There were simply too many of them. A lot of magazines folded, or they were sold to publishing houses who made them shells of their former selves, and even the old guard was hit badly. What's the solution to this? Well, in one quarter, that would obviously be to raise circulation by getting as many world exclusives and the like as you can. Which basically means falling to your knees in front of the publisher, and they were already the dom in the relationship to begin with. Get those exclusives, come what may. No matter what score the publisher wants in return, no matter how shit the game actually is. And even the biggest magazines in the world weren't immune. And in the case of Rise of the Robots, it worked. It sold a whole bunch, magazines with the game on the front sold a bunch, everyone's a winner. Well, except for any poor fucker who bought the game on the back of that 91%, eh? And thus the direction of the UK gaming press was set for good, trust in the gaming press as a whole took a sledgehammer to the scrotum, and it hardly mattered much anyway because the internet would be swallowing everybody up in just a few years. Rise of the Robots was arguably the moment that the bombs hit. The last 20 years of British gaming press represent a never-ending, punishing nuclear winter. So if you're looking for a legacy for Rise of the Robots, there it is. Arguably the game that killed the gaming press in Britain, and perhaps the world. Or rather, this is one of the biggest examples of the reason why games magazines are all but dead. What, you thought it was just a terrible overhyped 90s fighting game? Nah. It's so much worse than that. But there is an epilogue, or rather, a sequel. In 1996, Mirage released Rise 2 Resurrection. Oh, fuck me, senseless. Another large PR campaign preceded it, with the added line of, Rise of the Robots may have been rubbish, but we've learned from our mistakes. The only thing really separating it from the first one. The game was actually not all that horrid. Going by the PS1 version, it was a totally mediocre, generic fighting game and nothing more. But of course, it sold barely anything. People weren't willing to chug that snake oil down for a second time. I could do some extensive cover of the game, but honestly, there's no sequel on this earth that's more tainted by the original than this one. What would be the point? It would be a complete waste of time. Here's Rise 2, and it's better than the original game. Brilliant! 91%. Go and buy it. The fate of Mirage is pretty much unknown, but they did not release anything else past 1997, and so presumably folded around then. Time Warner's dalliance with publishing video games also wrapped up in 1997 when the interactive portion was sold off to Williams. As for Instinct, the small team that had developed Rise of the Robots, not surprisingly, this was their only game and they all pretty much just went their separate ways in the industry. And so the story of Rise of the Robots comes to an end. The tale of how... Well, no one ever tries to make anything bad, right? Like even Robert Oppenheimer's heart was in the right place, wasn't it? Those five people didn't know what kind of damage they would bring, but they made a game that, in one way or another, changed the world. Although it's probably best if you don't really talk to them about it. Bye for now!